Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Ryan.
How are you?
You know what? I'm a little disappointed.
Well, that's not yum or yum yum, but I guess that's an answer you could give. Disappointed. Just a tad. Well, I'm feeling particularly yum yum, Rachel. Thanks for asking. But what's made
yum
you
yum
disappointed?
Is gone.
Well, no, it's in our hearts. We'll carry the yum yum with us. We're the yum yum of Star Trek now.
Okay, we have to carry that legacy. Just
that burden.
Like the legacy ship that is Voyager.
Ah, Voyager's not here, Rachel. Why are you a bit disappointed? Is it because we're talking about an episode of Star Trek Discovery? Is that why?
Yep.
Well, it's already given your opinion away of the episode we'll be rewatching and discussing. That's right. We're yum yum because of the iconic line of dialogue from the former character Commander Nandi. The D stands for damn right she said yum yum in the season 2 finale. But she's not here anymore. So it's only us two, your hosts Ryan and Rachel. I just feel like we need to reiterate that is who we are, because every now and then, when I'm hosting this show with you, Rachel, I question my identity, because there are these moments in which I'm saying, well, this moment of Star Trek Discovery was profound in this way, and then I'm thinking, but that's not what I think, but then I'm like, but that is kind of what I think. So I'm Ryan, a person, and you are Rachel, a person. We are rewatching Star Trek Discovery, so if the people out there listening have not caught up with it, spoilers, we are going to be discussing the thing in detail in the full scope of where it has landed. We are talking episode 6 of season 3, which comes in at a 6.4, one of the lowest rated episodes of the season and of the show, but not the lowest, Scavengers. According to IMDb, the plot is this. After receiving a message from Book, Burnham and Georgiou embark on a rogue mission to find him, leaving Saru to pick up the pieces with Admiral Vance. Meanwhile, Stamets forms an unexpected bond with Adira. We're back at those IMDb descriptions, Rachel, that makes it sound like all of those things were plots that happened.
They are all things that happened, so technically they are part of the plot.
But they are not plots, all of them. Some of them are things that happen in the episode, but they're not a plot. They don't have a beginning, middle, and end.
We talk about Star Trek tending to have A and B plots.
Yeah, those usually have a 3-act structure, well, 5-act structure for TV, but usually they have a beginning, middle, and end, and an actual story. And an actual theme.
We are living in a postmodern Star Trek world, Brian. They don't need to have a 5-act structure. We just need to have, like,
two scenes,
and that's the B plot.
Well, no, that's a C plot.
You know, one of my very favorite things about this whole season is what continues to evolve between Stamets and Adira, and then also Hugh and Stamets and Adira. It's one of the best things I've gotten the chance to do of all 3 seasons.
I too am very excited about what's about to transpire.
This episode is considered to be one of the weaker ones of the season. When I initially watched it, I didn't feel like it was one of the weaker ones. I felt it was one of the normal ones because it was boring beyond belief. I almost fell asleep during it.
But there
and
were explosions.
I did not remember. Yeah. There's always explosions in every episode. And I did not remember it by the time the credits started at the end of the episode. It was instantly gone from my brain. It was junk. And that matched with a lot of the other episodes in this season on my first viewing. As I've said many times, season 3 is my least favorite. I find it boring and tedious and dull. Especially on that first viewing. The second viewing, there has been some bright spots, but overall, I find it very boring. Having to rewatch it for this, Rachel, I have not changed my opinion at all. I do not think this deserves to be one of the bottom-rated episodes, but I do not think it is a good episode. It is a piece of TV that went for 40 to 50 minutes.
Can I ask you a question? Is your perspective on the rating an issue with the rating of this episode or the level of episodes that you think is worse? Do you think this is like a 6.3 or whatever it was?
Yeah. I think it's definitely in the 6 category.
Yeah. It's generally competent.
It's fine. It's boring.
It's boring. The stakes, they make a big deal about them. Well,
before we get into all of that, let's establish what your feelings the first time round were, because you were a bigger fan of this season.
Why do I always got to talk about my feelings?
Because you love feelings. Rachel...
Feeling feelings is one thing. Talking about feeling feelings is another, Ryan.
Wow, do we need to get down a train here to help you conquer this? Rachel, what did you think of this episode because the first time around? Because you have said that you enjoyed season 3 a lot more and didn't find it as boring as I did, but this is considered to be one of the weaker entries in it. Where did you fall on it in the first time, and where do you fall on it now?
Here is where I've landed. I've landed on the same spot.
As me or the first time?
No, as both times viewing, which is that I just feel like it's nothing and I have nothing nice to say, so I don't want to say anything at all.
But do you have anything bad to say?
Yeah.
So it's a bad episode?
Yeah.
So you do have things to say, and it wasn't
nothing. I don't
want
to say them, though.
But I'm countering you. This isn't a nothing episode if all you have to say is bad things about it. To me, this is a nothing episode because I do have good things to say about it. I do have bad things to say about it, but all of it is done so blandly that it is so stock standard. Like, when we get into the bad things, it will be the camera was spinning around, the music was corny again. The good things, sometimes the characters didn't shout in scenes. Sometimes the characters reacted like I would in the scene, which is logical. Like, it's very... That's what I think is a nothing episode. But if you're saying it has nothing of good in it, that says more than it being a nothing episode.
I was gonna try and say it better, but I can't be fucked.
There's
I can't
no reason.
Be fucked to try and describe the way that I feel about this episode being nothing, boring, sickening, annoying, vaguely entertaining, and leaving me feeling miserable and dirty.
Like junk food.
Yeah, Cheetos.
It's Cheetos, like you've said many a times. We don't like this episode very much. It's not a great episode. The plot lines that the IMDb description said makes it sound like any of those things are engaging, thrilling, and or happen, but we know that not to necessarily be the case, at least for us two.
What is that?
Cat collar. To find Grudge if she ever got lost.
That cat can't get lost. It's got its own gravitational pull.
The episode opens up with a great monologue that says all these great things that you would have liked to have seen happen in the show happened off screen during these 3 magical weeks, a thing that we're very much used to in the best season of Star Trek Discovery, in which all these important things like Book and Michael saving the day in one episode happens off screen, Book and Michael having this magical year that changes her perspective as a person throughout the whole season happens off screen.
Any diplomacy happens off screen. So in this case,
Saru and the and Co contacting the Federation for the first ever time happens off screen. This one, the ship gets completely retrofitted. All of our crew members get taught how things work in the future. They get re-educated so that way they're not drooling Neanderthals. Oh, Rachel, they're really smart. They're so smart that they didn't even know what the programmable matter was when they entered the bridge. Even though they would have been trained about that, but hey.
No,
that's
Michael.
That's a part of the training.
Yeah, that's them getting the training.
Well, it was a part of the scene. Michael's supposed to be overseeing them, but she wasn't. It was that other lady.
Yeah. yeah, because Michael just says, oh, we're retraining people as we need. But it's just like, no. I'm pretty sure everybody on the ship should be taught how to use all of these new things that require, like, you know, a solid understanding, because if people don't understand quite how the programmable matter works,
yeah, like
they're really gonna fuck up their jobs.
It's obvious that we would want to see those things, see the crew encounter and learn about what the new future world operates on and how the society works, and see them get educated and see them implement the things that they've learned into a plot line. Like, oh, the teleporting thing and the transporters work like this. Let's integrate it into the episode's plot line. You know, like setups and payoffs and material to work with.
Or, you know, like they're having trouble melding the new with the old, and that is the thematic match for a character's experience trying to deal with the new technology, which could have been a really interesting pairing
and
with Stamets and Adira.
Oh, anything could be interesting if you just imagine it. And that's what this is we aren't shown anything relating to this aspect of the plot. We're just told, look, we upgraded the ship, and they just show us the CGI highlight reels of, look, the detached nacelles, the transporters now are, like, you tap your badge, it goes everywhere, the holographic screens everywhere, the programmable matter, but none of it ties into the plot of the episode,
and none of it matters,
so it's not impressive from an audience perspective other than looking at the CGI and noting down, yes, you've got different CGI than the CGI you had before, but it doesn't matter to the plot. And we would like to see this matter to the plot somehow. We would like to see the setup of this is how this tech works and see the payoff of it working in a scenario. Like the detached nacelles, they tell us it has maneuverability in a way, but wouldn't it be great to actually see in the episode maybe the Discovery ship has to swerve around something and you see debris go through where the detached nacelles would have been attached to show, oh, that's actually quite useful. But no, it is just a CGI highlight reel. And why is that entertaining? We live in an age in which CGI has been implemented so often in the stories and in the spectacle of TV, movies, whatever, that is it truly impressive anymore? Is one of the big questions, and that's why there are movies, these tentpole movies, that are trying to push the limits more and more, but we are becoming more and more accustomed to it. This isn't
And jaded.
This isn't Terminator 2, right? Where back in the day, it was really fucking cool to see the floor congeal together and turn into a man, right? That was really cool then. It's still kind of cool now because you remember, oh, in the time, that was really cool. But today, seeing
or
this...
Or when they do it as a reference.
Yeah, or when you see it used in this, where you go, yeah, you guys have impressive CG, but how about we implement it into the narrative? Because one of the things that I've really struggled with Star Trek Discovery Season 3 is, here's the pitch. A crew from 930 years ago is flung into the far future, where they have no attachment, no connections anymore. All their families are dead. The culture that they knew is dead. The Federation is dead, practically, right? They're having to bring in their old school values to the new world. Mm-hmm. Sounds interesting. When you also have that, though, wouldn't it be, I don't know, obvious and interesting and fun to see the clashing and the learning of how the new world works? Like, our crew don't feel like they're from a different era from the people that they're interacting with in the future. And a part of that would have been, well, let's have an episode or two in which we see them go under the training of how this all works and using it in a plot line. See, this would have been a greater use of the seed ship episode, where maybe you have their ship has been retrofitted, and to test it out, they go out to do some stupid away mission like the seed ship from last episode, and that uses the tech that we've now seen and shows and makes the crew undergo using the new methods and the new tech, thus introducing them to the new world. But there is no, like, conflict or disconnect or anything from our crew when it comes to being from a different time era.
Excuse me. There is one exception.
Mm.
Linus.
I'm talking about an actual plot. Like, that's such a... It's just a throwaway joke, but that's still nothing. Like,
but that is the closest that we get to a crew member of Discovery not immediately adjusting and being, like, completely satisfied and immersed in the tech. Because Detmer's like, do we need it? And I think it was Reese was like, hell yeah, we do. But Linus is the only one that we see fucking up in the smallest way.
And it's taken as a one-off joke that they repeat three times for the rule of threes. But it all happens off screen. Any of that happens off screen. And obviously we don't find it entertaining. But I wonder, for the people who really do love this show, how is this entertaining for them? Where the things that you would expect and would want to see of the pitch of a crew from the past are flung into the future, the things that you would expect and would want to see from that pitch happens off screen constantly. And in this episode, it happens off screen. There's not even a moment. You know what I would have loved? There's not a single moment in which a character from the future, from this time, says a phrase, and our characters don't know what that phrase means. Like, colloquially, they're all on the same level as one another. They all have the same reference points. There was a moment where the Admiral said, for a hot minute there, and I got completely thrown off. One, I don't think that character would say that. And two, they still talk like that in the future? One of the great things about Star Trek is the way the characters all talk in Star Trek wasn't necessarily reflective of how we talked in that modern era. It was a very prim, proper, kind of different manner of speaking, not fully Shakespearean, but, you know, other... It wasn't as if they were saying, yo, daddy-o, or where's the beef for the 90s or any of that. They were speaking in a way that was kind of timeless. And in a series now, in a season now, in which the whole point is our characters are out of time, it would actually be kind of interesting for them to meet characters that speak differently to them, but they all speak the fucking same.
You know a lot for someone who can't find his way past Saturn.
I majored in astrophysics.
Where?
Starfleet Academy.
Never heard of it.
East Coast School.
To go further into the show don't tell rule that they do not like to abide by, one of the major things we've talked about early on in this season, and we haven't really talked about that much because it hasn't really been prevalent, is the burn itself. You know, the mystery that this season's all been about? This episode brings up the burn in an interesting fashion, that it has two different camps, Michael's camp and Saru's camp, which is, and the Admiral's on kind of Saru's camp, which is Saru and the Admiral are very much like, look, the burn happened. It would be great to figure it out, but you know what would be actually important? Stabilizing the galaxy, forming something, like forming some semblance of structure again.
But that's not Michael's opinion, so it must be wrong. And so what does Michael think? She's right.
Michael's opinion is it is impossible to have any form of stabilization.
It is impossible to stabilize the Federation until the cause of the burn is known.
Till the mystery is solved. And that is the great debate that they have throughout this episode, and Michael is proven to be right and wrong in some ways. I am on the side of Saru, obviously. I brought up very early on, what does solving the burn really change? And this episode kind of highlights that in a weird way, which is...
I think it's close to nothing. I'm pretty sure it's very close to nothing.
Solving the burn does not mean that the Federation is now a stabilized body again. That doesn't change that. So in this episode where Michael goes rogue and goes against it because she believes that if you solve the burn, it solves everything, I don't agree with her, so I find her to be the antagonist of this episode in a lot of ways, and to be very, very annoying and someone I don't want to follow. But the episode's like, no, 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 but you agree with her, right? Because it's the burn, you know, the big mystery that we haven't really been focusing on that all this season. You care about that, right? No, I'd actually rather see Saru and the crew help the Federation build itself back up again by doing a bunch of missions and, you know, doing stuff. But there you go again, Rachel. That would be showing. Can't do that. We can't do that. Instead, Rachel, what does the episode dive into straight away instead?
I've forgotten.
Michael being right, of course. Because who does she enlist to help her on her mission to prove that she's right?
Jojo!
No, Space Hitler. That's the person you enlist to help prove that you're morally right. Hitler.
Oh, yeah, that's when she's just like, I would rather do something and regret it than not do it and regret it. Which is kind of the logic that made her become a mutineer and kill the Prime Universe version of the person she's talking to.
Yeah, get them killed, yeah.
But no reflection upon that. Just, they need to go get books.
No, they do reflect upon it in a way, which is Giorgio does some lampshading in which he points that out and says, that's a thing you've done before? And then Michael says, yes, it is, but hey, we acknowledge that we're repeating it again, so that means that we're doing some kind of arc here.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Michael is rewarded, at least in the first season. She was challenged and punished and ridiculed, and, you know, someone came in and said, Michael, you're wrong.
Sorry, I got confused because they do that at the end of the episode as well.
Oh, where Saru basically says, I'm disappointed, and she goes, yeah, but you're right to be disappointed.
No.
I'm disappointed.
I believe that there's a conversation between Michael and Giorgio at the end that is also like, oh, I already remember a time when a Michael Burnham asked me to trust her.
Oh, she was talking about her mirror version betrayed her and wanted to kill her, yes.
Which is very similar in the process of lampshading that occurs when Michael is asking for her help.
Yeah.
At the start.
God. Michael Burnham is a character that is like a... Is she the character that's changed the least in the show? Because I really feel like she hasn't changed from what she started out as.
No, they kind of...
She just keeps doing the same thing again and again and again, and they just keep saying, that's the right thing, again and again and again. She's a non-dynamic character.
Yeah, it's most... I feel like we've talked about this before, but the idea that the character arcs are not arcs but hamster wheels. And she starts over each new season thinking that she knows best and she knows what to do and everybody should listen to her. And then eventually she learns that she needs to rely on the crew and work as a team, and that the crew is her family. And start of the next season, just like, no, I know best. I need to do this on my own.
See, I disagree with you slightly. I see it as she starts out being like, I know best, everyone should listen to me. And instead of it being, and then she relies on the crew, it's more the crew then relies on her and they realize that she was right from the beginning. And then they get in line with her. And then everything works out smoothly.
Once everybody realizes that Michael was correct from the beginning, everything
then it works
is
well.
Fine. Yeah, that is a much more accurate betrayal.
Thus, this season really failed at that pattern because Michael is a character that the show says is always right. And that approach that you just talked about may or may not have worked in varying degrees in the other two seasons, but for us, it really fails in this season, not just because of the obvious we've seen this trick done before multiple times, but you have two characters in particular, and actually three now, which is Saru, Tilly, and the Admiral, all of which are against Michael, and why they're against her are all very fair reasons, and not even like fair reasons, they're just like understandable, like they're just normal reasons. It's not like a heated moral ethical debate in which it's like, Saru brought up an interesting philosophical point there about this. No. It is as simple to me as those characters are right and she is wrong. But the show says, no, they're wrong and she's right, and that's where the divide is for me with this season. When at the end of it, Michael is rewarded, and she's rewarded in this episode too in a minute way, but in the end of the season, she's rewarded. I feel such a like confusion there, because I just don't agree with her. And this episode, I don't agree with her at all. Like, to the point in which the only person who will side with her is Hitler herself, Mirror Universe Giorgio, and the only reason Giorgio sides with her is because she has nothing else to do. Isn't that kind of pathetic? You know? Like, nobody cares about the burn in the show, except for Michael. And it's weird because I, as an audience member, also don't care about the burn. But the show says, but you should, because Michael cares about the burn, and we care about it because we came up with it as writers.
He was looking for the thing that was important for her. And the thing that was important to her was to get this black box that can help solve the mystery of the burn. Not having been asked to do that, he puts himself in harm's way to go try and help her with this mission that means everything to her. It's the thing that she was pushing for constantly over the course of that year that she was there.
I would much prefer if the entire idea of the burn was scrapped for this season, or if it was actually more important than it is and it didn't end.
Yeah, if it was an overarching threat.
Yeah, if there was an actual threat of the burn happening again, if they took beats from disaster movies, like using the structure that you see typically with like a volcano thing.
I was thinking about Mount Vesuvius as well, honestly. Like, it's like,
because it's just like, well, this has happened this long ago, but we don't know if an eruption will happen again. We don't know what caused it, because it wiped out enough of our technology that we haven't been able to do it, and everybody is suspicious that a species did this on purpose, which is ideas that they bring up throughout the course of the season, but none of them are explored to our satisfaction.
Or even to their own. Because we meet the Vulcans, and they're just like, yeah, we did the burn, and it was us, and we feel bad about it. And it's like, okay. Like, I just don't think that the show itself has that strong of investment in the burn as an overarching plot like they did with the Red Angel, or even to the other extent, the Klingon War, where the Klingon War wasn't necessarily, but the Michael's character arc that season and the Lorca stuff, it felt like those seasons had a far stronger interest in those, and or a way to communicate the importance of those plots more so, and whether they did it coherently or not. That's not the issue. But at the end of season two, although I was confused by a lot of details, I still understood why this was an important thing to explore during the season. I don't care, and I don't really know why the burn is something that Michael has to fuck Saru over to solve right here and now. Oh, yeah, I do know, because her boyfriend's in trouble. Well, not her boyfriend,
well,
because
now her boyfriend.
Why wasn't he her boyfriend? Is there any reason why not?
Because it was more funny to see Giorgio tease her about not actually being with him, rather, because it would be more malicious if they actually were together and he was in deathly danger and she was trying to rip him to shreds.
You can still write it differently, though. Like, Giorgio's a character that could still make fun of her new boyfriend. That's fine. It's like at the end of this.
Ryan, when will you stop asking for quality entertainment from Star Trek Discovery?
Never. I demand it. It's like at the end of the episode, the Andorian, Rin, he gets shot in the chest trying to save Book, and then he lives so that he could go on to be brutally murdered in a pointless fashion by Osira. And I go, why didn't they just let him die doing the heroic sacrifice? Because he offers nothing to the plot here on out.
He does.
No, but not as a character. He just dispenses information that's entirely pointless.
He gives important exposition.
No. Useless exposition, which is, she's running out of dilithium. Yeah, obviously. There's none of it left, and she's selling it all. That's all his information is.
I think he gives another insight about her ship, but you're probably right.
Yeah.
If you're saying that a character is useless in Star Trek Discovery, I'm going to believe that that character is useless.
Talking about useless characters, Giorgio is in the episode. And
I thought you were ready for the Hudar. No. I got excited.
Can they? We know that they can't. We know that they don't for us. But is it truly possible
for Hitler to be redeemed?
For Hitler to be humanized and redeemed?
Oh, no.
Could they do it? Because they want to do it.
They want to, but I don't think this show would be the one
to do it. No, Babylon 5 will be the one to do it. But, like, I look at it in this episode, I go, oh, look, they're trying to humanize her because we're seeing weirdo flashbacks of some guy who died, and we don't get an answer to what that fully is because we've got to leave something for that Section 31 show that will never be made. I mean, that will be made in years' time.
Yeah, because at the time of recording, they're putting it off until they finish off one of the other shows.
Yeah, they don't want to have too many eggs in the basket. Yeah. I don't know. Giorgio's like a useless character to me. Truly useless. But in this, she did serve a point in which it was, she's the only character on board the ship that would join Michael in her mission. But I have to ask, did Michael need anyone in her mission to help her, really?
Kind of, but not really, because the only thing that Giorgio does is distract them.
Yeah.
And she manages to make a weapon from the scraps.
Right.
That's it. Like, she just covers her so that she has time to go find Book and set up the plan with him.
Right.
But there's no reason that it's really, really important. Like, there are relatively easy ways that they could write around that.
Yeah.
And it could have been quite entertaining to see Michael kind of running circles around Osiris' nephew and his incompetence, rather than Giorgio just trying to be a bigger bully than he is so that he crumbles like a cookie.
Yeah. I also ask these questions because it's obvious I don't like Giorgio as a character, and if I did, this would not be a question that would form in my brain.
No.
But it is because I do not like her character. I do not like her performance. I do not think that you can humanize her and make her a sympathetic hero. I do not think she has changed. I think that they do the Futurama thing in which they flip the switch on her back and now she's in Maudlin mode. And then they flip it back and then she's in jokey mode again. I don't take her character as a dramatic character. I think of her as nothing but a snark comedy machine. And then they'll just decide, no, she's not anymore. And it feels completely jarring and out of character. And I don't buy it for a fucking second. So a whole episode where she's like, Michael, you
mean
something.
Which character are you talking about? Because I feel like that could be adjusted slightly and applied to most of the crew.
But you, there you go. You said it had to be adjusted slightly. It is the most off-putting and noticeable with Georgiou because of how they always treat her and what she is. At least with the other characters, it's like, it's off-putting with them as well. But like, I can understand Tilly being the nervous joke machine character who's actually a bit smarter than we give her credit for. And when push comes to shove, she'll do the right thing because she's a good person, right? But Georgiou is the person who stands there going, she either kicks the person in the face or insults them with like terrible jokes. That's
but
all a character is.
Now there's the third option of she fell down.
Oh, because she's having seizures.
She fell down.
That's not a thing.
Now she has three things. Options, which is less than most action figures. But now she has three, Ryan.
Well, and that's a thing too, right? Where this episode, you have the main plot of it that fills up the running time is following the two least dynamic characters doing the exact things we know them to do. So none of it is interesting or surprising or refreshing or entertaining to us. Because what's Georgiou going to do?
I don't come here for entertainment anymore.
I really liked in Star Trek, although we knew those characters like Kirk and Spock and all of those, they would still do things that were really like clever and only they would do, but it was still like, wow, Kirk really did lie to those guys and say that he had this maneuver in his back pocket or this element. Or like, oh, the Doctor in Voyager, he's actually learning how to lie and all this kind of stuff. Like,
even Archer in Enterprise.
Yeah, sometimes he would frown a little bit less. That was a surprise. But like, or sometimes he would kick with a shirt on. I know, a real shock for Scott Bakula. I mean, that guy in shirts, I don't think of those two things together.
Are you not in shorts all the way through? You're
not
topless
all
for
the
all
way
of it,
through.
Aren't you?
I mean, we're
Is this plot so boring because the two characters that are paired together are the ones that are the most the samey? Like every episode, they're the like that is just the same beat again and again and again.
Yeah, I think for me, a larger part of it is none of it matters.
No. But what about
the
book?
And
the black boxes.
It's just like if you skipped this episode.
Oh, nothing's lost.
And I think you could even put the pieces together without watching the recap at the start of the next episode.
Yep.
I don't think this is a step in the journey that you need to be present for it to be satisfying when you get to the end.
We know what we don't like about it. And we don't discuss this a lot, but this is considered to be the best season, although it has the lowest rated episodes consistently across the board.
I think you may have mentioned that.
Why is this an episode in considered to be the best season that is one that is maligned and looked down upon by the fan base of the show? Why is this one particularly one that doesn't sit well with people who love the show as much as other episodes? Because to me, this is still better than People of Earth. There's still plots and stuff that happens and character arcs and beats. But what do you think is the thing that holds this episode back?
I guess one problem is the level of melodrama.
But that's
what we've come to expect from the show, so I don't know how much of that can go to explaining things.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything that's unique to this episode. It just feels like I've been beaten down by Star Trek Discovery.
I think it is, although we've had problems with the season, the momentum has been building up towards things like Michael lands on the planet, and then the next episode, Saru and crew, and then the next one is they go to Earth, and the next one is, well, we've got to go to this place so that this person can find out where the Federation is, and the next episode is, we found the Federation, and we have to prove ourselves, and then this episode is, let's save Michael's boyfriend. The momentum is really cut off here. This is an episode that I think really slows everything down and really does feel like we're wasting time, and the stakes are so, so low, because Book, although we don't know him particularly well, we do get the feeling like he would have gotten out of that situation without Michael's help. So the stakes are incredibly low in this. The momentum is halting, and also I do believe that this episode just does make Michael look like a jerk. And even for fans of the show and for people like us, you can recognize when they're just making the main character or characters you do and don't like into things just to fit the narrative of the season, which is Michael's being a jerk right now because she doesn't feel like she belongs, but it still doesn't feel true because we don't understand fully as to why. And this episode, a part of it is her not boyfriend is in trouble, the guy that's kind of changed her perspective. But again, we never got to see it, and they're not boyfriend and girlfriend, they're not a couple. So you can't even care on that level, because why aren't they a couple? They just decided that they're not, so that they can kiss for the first time in this episode, and it feels like it's really earned, when it isn't, because I'm sitting there going, wait, you're telling me that these two people spent a whole year together and they never kissed? Yeah, not buying that, sweetheart.
So being faced with that, I think they both are forced to acknowledge how they feel about each other. Where it goes from there, who knows?
Hugh Dartheim?
Yes, please give me the mercy of this episode coming to an end.
Oh, come on, Rachel. Let's get more positive towards the end of this.
I liked Hugh in this episode.
Well,
I thought he looked cute in his pajamas. I like that they have matching pajamas.
We've seen it before.
I still think it's cute.
Okay.
It's a different pair, I think.
No. And then, no, they have the badges still.
They still have the badges, but I don't know if they had the maroon shirt.
They did. No. It was just very dimly lit.
I thought they had a blue one for some reason.
No, just dimly lit.
Okay.
Hugh was here in the episode to nod and smile. I got brought back to season one again, and I was like, oh, cool. Hey, Hugh has a character now, writers. Could you let him have it? I don't know what it is, but I'm getting kind of more insulted now that he does have a character, they keep not letting him do things.
The scene was about Stamets.
It's about Stamets.
And Stamets' experience of Hugh dying, not Hugh reflecting on him dying or how
any interiority
that's changed
or personal
their relationship or how maybe he's offended or maybe seeks a connection with Adira and maybe to understand what Gray's growing through as well.
Well, let's get into this properly. What is Hugh's plot in this episode?
No, he doesn't have one, Ryan.
Okay, what does Hugh do in this episode?
He talks to Paul when they're in
bed. In how many scenes?
One.
Oh, just one near the end?
Yeah.
And what's the conversation?
Adira took the things out of my arm.
No. Let me just kick it off the right way. Hugh walks over and says, hey, Paul. And then basically lets Paul start to recap the plot that he has had in the episode that we haven't talked
about. They're talking about their day.
I just really want to make sure.
They're reconnecting at the end of the day.
Oh, that's the reason.
And there's maybe like Hugh gets to say what happened in Medbay.
No. Maybe.
Before the scene starts.
Yeah, exactly.
To say that.
The whole point is.
And then we get to see what Paul's feeling about his day and his budding paternal relationship with Adira. Because, no. He made it very clear that he's gay.
And they're 16.
Yeah, they're 16.
They're a tween,
he's
though.
He's gay, but Giorgio's still pan.
Well, yes. Yes. The point I wanted to make by highlighting that Hugh's whole thing is he walks over and says, "Hey, Paul, tell me about the plot that you had this episode," is to just demonstrate Hugh does not have anything in this episode as per usual, which is disappointing because actually the last two episodes, Hugh did have stuff to do. Not fully, he never got to have a complete arc, but he had stuff to do. But now is back to, hey, you, the other main character in this show.
Well, Michael,
tell me
Michael didn't
the
need
plot
to be
because
shoved.
I wasn't there.
Michael didn't need to be shoved into the limelight this episode. She took it upon herself.
Yeah, and
so Hugh's purpose was null.
So Hugh is here to say, hey, Paul, tell me the plot, because I wasn't here to be told the plot of your story. But also, from a writer's perspective, Hugh is here so that Paul can spout out loud what he learned from the plot today in this very after-school specialty way in which he's just like, you know, Hugh, I never thought I'd meet someone else like me who is me, but they're a them and a tween, and they're like me, where they like engineering, they have a dead ghost lover that only they can see that helps them grieve, and, well, that's kind of it, actually. We have nothing else in common. But those are weird things to have in common. Thought no one else would have those.
Well, they're both tech geniuses.
And yeah, that's what I said. Engineering whizzes. And Hugh just smiles and nods. Isn't it weird that Hugh barely talks in the scene in which Paul is telling Hugh about himself? Like, about Hugh's self? In which he's like, hey, Hugh, this thing about you. And Hugh just doesn't say anything. He just looks. Is that weird?
Yes. But it's to be expected. Weird.
Are they a good couple?
We don't know.
No, we're three seasons in. I think we can bang the gavel down on this one, Rachel. We've had enough time. No. Are they a good couple?
I don't. Yes, I guess.
Why?
Because there's no current red flags.
Okay, that's good. That's the reason.
There have been red flags, but then they said that they loved each other again and they got back together.
What a compelling argument you're making.
They don't seem to have arguments. And
that doesn't mean that they're a good couple, though, does it?
Hugh is good at listening to Stamets and pointing out his character flaws.
You can have a non-aggressive, non-overtly toxic relationship. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a good relationship still.
That's what I was struggling with. There's no... For me, it's just so nothing. There's no reason to go either way on it.
Yeah.
So it's just like, well, they seem to make each other happy for the most part now that their relationship drama after he was resurrected was immediately resolved at the end of the season after they kept on putting it off for more drama, more drama, more drama. We can't deal with this now. We'll deal with this later.
Yeah.
We'll kiss and everything's fine now. So... That's why I ended up going with they are a good couple, because there aren't enough things that make me think that they're a poor match.
Oh, there's plenty I could rattle off, but I... Look, they're fine, I guess. I just don't think they're real. That's the thing. As a couple, I don't think they're a real couple. I don't see why they're together.
That's a different question.
No, but that does tie into, are they a good couple? If I don't think of them as an actual couple, then they're not really a great couple. When I think of Tom Paris and B'Elanna Torres, I know who they are as individuals, and I know who they are to one another in a relationship. And I understand why they're in a relationship, and I care.
They're a better couple than Michael and Ash were.
Are they?
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
We don't get to see enough to determine that. I at least understood why Michael and Ash... I at least understood why Michael and Ash were interested in one another and why it didn't work. I can't tell you why Hugh is in a relationship with Paul. I just can't tell you why. What does Hugh get out of the relationship? All he gets is a guy who talks about himself constantly. That's all he gets. What does Hugh get out of this relationship?
He gets to smile and nod.
There you go. You got it. You know, I had a real good chuckle. Did Hugh forget that he made the things that yes. went on Paul's arms?
Because yes, he did. Everybody did.
Because Hugh reacts like, ugh. I'm so glad that Adira figured a way to get those off.
I hated those things.
I hated those things. And it's very much in a way where it feels like you do know that you made those, right? And you could have taken those off, right? And
you were forced into making them.
Off screen
with your engineering medical abilities.
Yeah.
So that he wasn't
Which has never come into play again.
So that he wasn't stabbing himself every time.
What a great storyline Hugh is. And look, we haven't even talked about Paul and Adira because what is there to talk about? They have a conversation twice, one of which is here's an expo dump about this new piece of tech, and the other one is another expo dump of do you not know my backstory? Both of them did that to one another where Adira's like, my backstory happened in Forget Me Not. Let me tell you about it. And Paul's like, well, you don't know about my backstory from season 1 and 2, but let me tell you about that. And that's all it is. That's all that their scenes are, is just, did you not know this thing about me? Here it is. And that's it. They're like, what does it even say more so about it? Oh, Adira is written by adults who are clearly too old to understand how to write for a 16-year-old. Because, one, they keep calling them a tween genius. They're 16, by the way.
Teen.
No. Tween, according to the show.
And she's 16, not a 16.
And then, of course, the classic line from Adira that felt like a 56-year-old man took over their body. You're kind of like the bomb, huh? What was that? What the fuck was that?
You're kind of like the bomb, huh?
I was until you showed up.
One of the things I do want to mention before we wrap this out is young people. I've complained before on the show that the young characters all sound like old people and they don't sound like young people.
No.
And then I realized we were talking about this before we start recording. I paused the episode and Tilly said something that was like hella cool, man, like young. Person talk, what writers say, and her as an actress thinks is young person energy. And I've said this before offhandedly on the pod. I'm like, oh, you know, and the actress who plays Tilly is quite a few years older than us. We're like 28, 29. And I realized, wait a moment, how old is Tilly supposed to be in
Don't
this show?
Know anymore.
Because the actress is clearly in like her mid-30s, mm-hmm. but the character's being played like she's supposed to be Wesley Crusher's age in the first season of TNG.
And she started off as a cadet. She hasn't been an ensign very long.
And it's like one of the weird things about Discovery, right, is one of your main characters is played by someone in their 30s, feeling like they're playing someone who's supposed to be 19. And it feels so false. So false to me.
But, yeah, and it's not something that we stop to pay attention to all the time because there are so many more glaring and obvious things that make Star Trek Discovery feel hollow or vacuous
or bizarre.
To us. And this is just another sprinkle on top.
It's been one that's been there from the very beginning.
It's always there. It's always there. But now we get to know that Tilly is definitely not a cat person.
No, we heard about that, but now we get to see it. I guess
she says it to the cat.
I guess what brought it to my attention so vividly now is we're 3 seasons in, and she hasn't really matured that much. She has in some ways and hasn't in others. And
shit.
Yeah, shit. And yeah, shit. And then shiitake mushrooms. She might as well have said that. Right, but...
My sentiments, exactly.
Why I bring this up is I think of other characters like Will Wheaton as Wesley or Harry Kim, for instance, where they were young characters, cadets, ensigns, and as the series goes along, those actors, of course, age, as do the characters. And Wesley, by the end of the show, is
being fondled.
Is being fondled in time, but he is a far more mature character than he was at the beginning. Even though I don't like Wesley, he didn't feel like he was a kid anymore. And same with Harry Kim. Harry Kim never felt like he was a kid, but he definitely had young, fresh-faced energy. He always carried that with him.
He was green.
Yeah. He always carried that with him, though, didn't he? To the very end, Harry Kim. But he did, I don't know, Garrett, his performance, he felt like he had matured, but not too much of a difference because Harry never got stuff to do and never got to be able to have a character arc. But Harry in season 1 to Harry in season 7, I can see that there's a difference of maturity there. But Tilly, season 1 to season 3, she still plays it like she's a fresh-faced academy, like out of the academy 19-year-old. And it's very jarring when the actress is like, what, 35?
Commander Burnham left to pursue a mission of her own against my direct orders.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
My sentiments exactly.
My writing for this episode is a yum. And I'm glad that I get to forget about it fully when we've ended this recording.
Well, that's the thing, like, as much as we've talked negatively about it, I don't feel 100% comfortable giving this episode a yum, because I don't think it's a truly awful episode. But I'm definitely not going to give it a yum yum, because I do still think it's a bad episode. But it is in that weird middle ground in which none of it offended me. I didn't think it was as overtly stupid as other episodes. I will not remember it as soon as we finish talking about it. It is just going to be one of those ones in which someone says, hey, do you remember the episode where Book was a slave on a quarry planet? And I'll look at you and go, what? That's how this episode is. So this episode gets a yum. One of the most interesting things I just discovered is that the rest of the season ahead, none of them go above a 6. All of the episodes, according to IMDb, are below 7s. Isn't that kind of interesting to think about? That the first half of the season was the one people rated more favorably because maybe, ooh, this is all leading to something. And then you get to this episode in which it halts the pace and it just stops and dawdles along. And then the rest of the season dawdles along. But maybe we'll feel differently because the next episode, I remembered having a little bit more stuff going on. We're going to be talking about for next time, episode 7 of season 3, Unification Part 3, or Unification 3, which is, of course, a reference to TNG, which was really important in Star Trek Discovery, which is a show that has always been referencing the TOS era, but hey, they're in the future, they can reference TNG now all they like. There's two plot synopsises on IMDb, I think they're the same one twice, but I'm going to read the first one, which is, according to IMDb, it goes as such. While grappling with the fallout of her recent actions and what her future might hold, Burnham agrees to represent the Federation in an intense debate about the release of politically sensitive but highly valuable Burn data.
There's already a factual error within that synopsis.
Oh, Michael feels guilty?
No. Michael comes up with the idea to do the debate. She doesn't.
No, but
like,
she agrees.
Volunteer on behalf of them. She says, we have to do this thing and I have to be the one to do it.
I remembered it slightly differently, but that's the point. This episode, I remembered having stuff going on, so hopefully it will live above the lower rating than it did for this episode we just covered, by the way. So, boy oh boy, but again, ratings on those sites aren't necessarily reflective of what we think. We think one of the middling ranged episodes is one of the higher episodes of the season. So there you go. Rachel, where can people find us online to talk to us further?
They can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, Tumblr.
Twitter, you said?
Twitter. At yumyumpod, or shoot us an email at yumyumpod@gmail.com, and even check out our Patreon if they want to give us a little extra support and in return get some extra content from us where we discuss some broader pop culture and, of course, talk more Star Trek, being good or bad episodes, or even the movies.
Yep, the movies. Everyone's favorite entries of the Star Trek franchise is the movies. We're talking about the TNG era and soon the Abrams era, so that will be something.
Woo!
Woo indeed, Rachel. Woo indeed. How do you want to finish this episode off?
Oh, we're going to go on Boogie Woogie.
Boogie Woogie? Cool Cat loves the Boogie Woogie.